Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the amazing Lord Tentacle, Duncan Thompson, and Bob's mom, Carla Everson. Today we've got our newest gnome Camden Wright and myself, Ange, and we're going to completely skip over the Get to Know Gnomes question because the whole episode is going to be about getting to know Camden. Hi Camden, welcome to the stew!
Hi, Ange. It's great to be here.
I'm really glad we were able to arrange this.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited.
So can you give us a little bit of a introduction for our listeners and our readers?
I'm Camden Wright. I make games mostly about feelings, and sometimes it's murderous feelings, sometimes it's happy feelings or sad feelings, but it usually has to do with some sort of human connection. I am really, really happy that John Arcadian asked me to be part of the stew because there are so many people here that write that I respect and know personally. And I live in Colorado. I've got a wife, two kids, and a dog named Rockford. And Rockford is officially the best dog in the world.
What kind of dog is Rockford?
He is a Labradoodle. I used to say that he is a Lab Poodle mix. But I just got, people would say, oh, you mean Labradoodle. And so I just gave in. He's a Labradoodle.
Yeah. Labradoodles are great.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the games you've made.
I did a game that is a mashup of Cthulhu Horror and the television show The Bachelor. It's called Madness and Desire. Because, you know, I like to, apparently, weird things is my brand. And it's you go through the process until eventually at the end of the game, you get to the consuming ceremony where everyone that Cthulhu doesn't choose to become his life partner is consumed by the other contestants.
And is that available anywhere for people to go out and find?
Yeah, you can go to my website, camden.com. It's based on Lasers and Feelings, so it's 100% free. And the next game I'm working on is a game called One Child's Heart, which is about children who are struggling emotionally in life and the adults that have a chance to create a connection and help them save themselves as they move forward.
I've heard about many tears from that game.
It happens. It is definitely not... I don't ever design anything with the intention of making people cry. I make things that are as honest as I can. And then whatever emotions happen because of that happen.
So let's go all the way back to the beginning. Can you give us your origin story about becoming a role-playing gamer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super, super old. So it starts way, way back with original D&D.
Many of us gnomes are, you know, even beyond old man Logan, Bob, many of us gnomes are actually fairly old.
So my cousin Steven and Dwayne got the original blue box set of D&D and never played it. And eventually, sorry, Steven, I took it when we were moving. And I read that thing probably 100 times, literally probably 100 times, cover to cover, the adventure and everything. That blue dragon on the front is like burned into my memory forever.
Is that one an Elmore cover?
I think so. I would have to look at it to be 100% sure of the artist, but I just know it. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, that's my childhood on a box. But I never got a chance to play it because that was something that everywhere I was, that was something only white kids played. Mm. And so as a biracial kid, that was not something I was ever welcome to join. And growing up in high school, I found some kids that wanted to play Heroes Unlimited. And that went predictably badly, but I still got the bug. I remember it all ended, the first big campaign we did ended in PvP and people screaming at each other and never talking to each other again, as is often the case when teenagers get involved in some of these things without proper gaming role models.
You know, it's funny. I think back on some of those early games because, you know, I'm white, but I'm female. So I had a similar thing where I was never invited into the games until like my last year of high school when a new friend that had just transferred in was like, do you want to play D&D? Do I? and he brought me in. But I think back on some of those early games and it's like, I would never put up with that crap today. But it still got enough of a hook into me that I was addicted. I was all in, even as bad as those games were.
100% agree. Absolutely, yeah. The exact same. My experience looking back on it is a train wreck of what not to do. As me as a player, as GMs. I mean, like, every part of it was terrible. But it helped me love playing pretend like I do now.
But it sounds like your initial, like, foray into gaming was you just took the reins and were the first GM?
No, I wasn't. It was a situation similar to you. It was, well, you know, we need one more player. You know, nobody else is willing to play. Hey, Camden, do you want to come and sit down with us? And so that was, we played after school. I think it was my junior or senior year of high school. And then I didn't play for years after that because I couldn't find anybody.
Oh, wow. How'd you re-enter the gamosphere?
Occasionally, I would make friends with people who would have that secret conversation, like, because we'd start talking about nerdy things. And this is the 80s and into the 90s. And so D&D was officially a very, very bad thing. Gaming was a bad, evil thing that led you to sin and despair. So people would be like, oh, yeah, you like comic books? Okay, that's cool. Yeah, you like those nerdy movies? Okay, that's pretty cool. What do you think about D&D? You know, kind of could do the little head tilt, look around, make sure no one's listening. Yeah, I think D&D is pretty cool. Oh, you do? Really? And so eventually I found a few people to play with sporadically over the years, but it's been later in adulthood that I really came into my own.
That's really cool. What type of games do you like running or playing? And is there a difference between the two?
There is a difference. I like running things that, like I said earlier, involve human emotion. I make a lot of jokes about that, but it's true. If I've got a group of kids, I'll run supers. But for myself, I have a tendency to run noir, modern things. I like games where there is an inherent consequence to violence and to misbehaving that everyone understands.
No murder hobos.
No, yeah, no murder hobos. And if you do, you know that you are officially going to be in a very, very bad situation. But as a player, I have a tendency to play things that I've never played before, and I'll always choose a group of people over the system.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally get that, too. There are some systems I just don't want to play. Like, my group generally knows that, let's not do a Cthulhu campaign. That's not really Angie's thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll play almost anything that the people I want to play with want to bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
It may not prevent me from bitching about the system if I don't like the system, but at the same time, I'm still going to play with those people.
Absolutely. I'm pretty well known for not being a huge fantasy fan, and I played a bunch of it in my life to be able to play with people, but it's never my first choice.
Yeah. Do you have a genre that, you know, like, as a player, is your first choice?
I like weird things. I played a game recently called Dialect, which is all about forming language. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to be a game, but I'm in. And I had the best time playing that. I just enjoyed every part of it so much. So I'm always looking for those things that push my expectations.
That's really cool. I think fellow gnomes John and Senda were on a one-shot podcast of that game. I think from not last year, but the year before, I think is at Gen Con is when it was recorded, I think. And I remember listening to those episodes going, this is a really weird game, but this is fascinating.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I brought life to a Portuguese sculptor in that game that was on Mars, and we created language and railed against the travesty of corporations defiling my art.
That's really cool. Can you tell us a little more? I mean, we touched on the games you've designed. Tell us a little bit more about One Child's Heart, because I know that's the one you're currently developing.
Yeah, I am, and I'm hoping to have that done this year. One Child's Heart is it's an unusual concept, and it can be really hard to get people to sit down at the table. And it was originally designed as sort of a love letter to the kid that I used to be, a message of hope for people who are struggling and understand what it's like when terrible things happen and you're doing everything right. and to really understand that those things aren't your fault. And as an empathy builder to people on the outside, to understand that the things you say, though you might never see it, can make a huge difference. So kids, the players are take on characters who are a group of child welfare professionals, therapists, law enforcement, things like that. And they have the, through the use of a mumbo-jumbo super high-tech machine, enter into the memories of a child. And these are all traumatic memories, not like super, it's not a trauma-focused game. They're just bad things that are happening. And you have the players have, or the characters have a chance to step in and say, hey, what's going on? Help the kid reframe what's going on. And then so that as they go forward, they can't save the child. They can't pull them out of the circumstance. This is, everything has happened in the past and it's not time travel. But that ability to say, it's not your fault. Here's what you could do to survive this and plan for what you're going to do when this is over.
That sounds really intense.
It can be. It definitely can be. But every experience is different. Every time I run the game, I create a unique child. So every time you sit down at the table with me to play the game, you are having a singular experience that belongs to just that moment and just those players.
What's the mechanics behind it? What's the mechanical framework, I guess I should say.
Yeah, it's really straightforward. I'm simple-minded, so I like simple things. it's D6 based, and you're generally rolling either 2D6 or 3D6, and you're trying to hit a target number. That target number, if you're playing on easy mode, starts at 11, and then through the course of the game, it drops. So as you spend more time around kids, even if they don't like you, they have a tendency to their walls break down and they get used to you. And so communicating is easier. And so that the mechanics reflect that.
That makes sense with kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you succeed, then narratively, the conversation with the kid goes well. If you do not succeed, things go really, really badly. And you have a couple choices to make, whether you want to have the child lose trust with you, if you want to cause some unintentional trauma, which you get to watch, you've said something that triggered that kid, and it's something that you can't look away from, and there's consequences for that. Or there's also a mechanic where you can choose to violate your ethics once per game. And you do something like, if you're a therapist, like break confidentiality, something, one of those tenets of what you do, and you change that failure into a success, but you're going to pay for that for the rest of your career. And mechanically, you lose a die, which is super punitive on whatever it was that you were rolling.
Wow. I want to try this.
Yeah.
I think we're going to both be at QCC come this fall.
Absolutely.
So I definitely want to try this. I don't know if I'm going to like it, but I want to try it.
I will tell you the one thing that is most common said after people play it is, this is much more hopeful than I ever expected. And this game is not trauma-focused. This is about human connection and empathy.
Which gets me to the you know, like Senda always says that your games make her cry.
Yeah.
Like, she can always count on your games making her cry. And it sounds like it's not something you deliberately set out to do, but just because you're aiming at these human connections, that's really where you're getting it.
Yeah. And so oftentimes, the part where people will get most emotional in one child's heart is at the end of the game, we do an epilogue. And based on how well the characters have done throughout the game, it's either completely positive or partially positive. So you narrate, everyone has a chance to narrate both the positive and negative things that happened to this kid as they go into adulthood. And it is when people start talking about this child starting a family of their own or going to college and getting the job that they really wanted despite having to drop out for a while and it taking them longer than they wanted. It's those moments where they really see the future and the hope that's possible. That's where people are generally the most touched.
One of my other fascinations beyond gaming is true crime stories. And, you know, there's a lot of messy stuff in those stories. And it's always very heartening when you hear a story of somebody who broke the cycle of abuse or whatever problem had been like plaguing their family forever. You know,
absolutely.
It sounds like this is kind of along those lines.
Very, very much so. Very much so.
Very cool. So that's your secret for making people cry. Get into the heart of human emotion.
That's right. I'm a big believer that the art, and I say this a lot, but the art of games and making games is getting people to feel real emotions based on imaginary situations. And you see it in all kinds of games, not just mine, but it happens in D&D, it happens in Cthulhu. You see fear and joy, triumph and sadness and anger. And that's powerful. And I think that's where the best parts of gaming live.
I think if you keep the people the PCs are interacting with, the NPCs, you keep them grounded in a degree of, you know, I don't play game for exact reality duplication. You know, mm-hmm. I still want the fantastic, you know, jump on the chandelier, swing across the room, fantastic adventure type of things. But at the same time, I want the emotional reality of the game grounded at a particular level. So it's like, I know one of my most rewarding things is when I realized my PCs were totally invested in one of the NPCs and would never let any harm come to him. Mm-hmm. If they had a say in things, nobody was going to harm a hair on his head. You know, it's like I knew I'd actually, okay, I made that NPC right. I did that right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And I run a lot of crime dramas, police dramas. Mm-hmm. And you definitely want to, I mean, in real world, if we were playing it as reality, you would spend a lot of time filling out paperwork and letting highly trained people do their very specific jobs. Nobody, most people do not want to play that in real life. So you want not only the sense of it's up to me and only me, or it's up to our team and only our team, but you also want that feeling at the end where we did a good thing. You know, we brought justice to somebody and the emotional reward that comes with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. So what type of things can people expect to see from you on The Stew?
I am going to kind of keep doing what I'm doing, and that's talk about things that are important to me. As somebody who is a biracial male gamer, it has been a specific journey being part of the community and still is. So I feel like that's the voice that I need to bring about the importance of diversity in PCs, and you just touched on it with your article on NPCs and previously also. To talk about safety, to talk about human emotion inside of games, mm-hmm. and about what I have to offer to kind of bring what I feel is the best parts of gaming further to the forefront.
That's awesome. I definitely look forward to more of your articles. I've enjoyed the ones we've seen so far.
Thank you so much. I love yours too.
Oh, thank you. It's a love fest.
Yay!
I think, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
Just everyone has been so welcoming so far. So thank you so much for your positive feedback. And let me know what I do that you love and what I do that you hate. And we'll see how that plays out.
Let's head into our outro. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew's website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Gamer Tissues, the two-ply gentle facial tissue that will collect the tears of players so GMs can proudly relive their emotional manipulations of their players later. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
Misdirected Mark. Chris, Phil, and Bob go live every Tuesday evening at 8:45 Eastern to break down and get inside games, game mastering, playing games, and game design in an effort to entertain and inform you, the listener.
And if you have the opportunity to listen to them live, you should definitely be part of the chat room for life.
Absolutely. I think that's 6:45 the Queen's time, isn't it?
Yes, 6:45 the Queen's time. You can find us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Cam, where else can we find you on the internet?
I'm pretty simple to find. You can find me at Camden, CAMDON.com. I'm at Camden on Twitter and Camden W on Facebook.
That is awesome. I love when I'm able to get like something like Ange something, you know, as a Twitter handle or whatever. Usually I can't, so it's just my Twitter handle is at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13, because that was what I could get at the time.
I hear that. And you should follow Ange. She's awesome.
So do you think we avoided the stew this week?
I think we've done enough. I heard someone chopping carrots, but I think we made it through.